how do we break down the them and us culture that's evolving in the adaptation process we're all in? And how do we get everybody at these meetings instead of the separation and separate meetings we see now? If these frozen viruses emerge from the melting ice and find their way into the world's rivers and oceans, do they pose a new threat to humans as they could morph into something else if the conditions are perfect, like in the lab?
This is the People's Countryside Environmental Debate Podcast, and thanks for stopping by. Hopefully you'll explore with us and delve into and examine some of the big challenges we all face. I'm Stuart the Wild Man Mabbott, one of the co-hosts. Who are you?
I'm William Manclow. Thanks very much for being with us on another episode of the People's Countryside Environmental Debate Podcast. We'll mention that twice in the introduction. It's the longest podcast title in the world.
Well, getting there. My job is just getting nature part of everybody's daily life, which, you know, in these important times is an important step to getting people to want to protect it. What is it you do, William?
You find me behind a camera, you find me flying a drone, you find me in front of a live audience, and you'll find me behind a microphone. They're the four native habitats of the Mankillo.
And we try and have a conversational style, even though says in the title of the podcast, debate. It's generally just William and I answering listener questions, and we have real discussions, real opinions, and authentic views.
Authentic views, yeah. And yeah, I think we sometimes verge on the debate, but it's very, very rare, isn't it? Because debate often is when you sort of posture with each other, yeah. But we try to explore each other's views as well along the way.
We try and break down the big issues into bite-sized chunks. We try and come up with actions that address the questions you, the listeners, send in for us to discuss. Very often they're not about the countryside, they're about all sorts of different things, but we try and bring it back to an environmental angle. If anybody has a question, William, how can they email us?
You can email thepeoplescountryside@gmail.com, that's thepeoplescountryside@gmail.com. You can send us a message on any of our platforms, so via Instagram, via Facebook, however you would like to send us a message.
We're not scientists, we're just like you, we're just trying to explore the big issues and trying to find a way forward.
Yes.
So we have two listener questions to discuss in each episode now. And who's the first one from, William?
First question is from Elaine in Telford, a returning listener question giver.
Mm.
Is that the right phrase? Thanks for your question, Elaine. I will go straight into what Elaine has asked us.
Longish
here.
Question, this.
It is, yes.
We haven't read this. We don't really know. We don't prepare for these recordings, so I'm going to hear this for the first time as William reads it out.
Yes, I actually was just looking at where the questions were from, and I just maybe caught a few words here and there, but I have not read the question either. So Elaine says, like you guys probably, I've been to many public meetings run by scientists who specialise in systems thinking, filled with community activists trying to develop new, more sustainable circular systems that society can then hang itself on and frame itself around. The aim being to try and mitigate the climate and ecological crisis that we all face. We don't have to try too hard these days to convince people we need to act to avert disaster, because unless the natural world's health is generally good, then humanity will struggle to survive. The general issue and barrier to people making changes in their lives is there's a lack of leadership and direction from the people with the power to galvanise us. The leaders, decision makers and people with vested interests in maintaining the business as usual attitude rarely attend these meetings or absorb the feedback these meetings produce. How do we break down the them and us culture that's evolving in the adaptation process we're all in? And how do we get everybody at these meetings instead of the separation and separate meetings we see now? It's not too late. We've not yet polluted as much as we think, and the unfairness in the world's societies is not too advanced either. That's just my view, and my view is there's still an opportunity for a fair and just survival. Yeah.
Again, plenty to go off there. So as I said, we break things down into bite-sized chunks. So let's just start from the top. Let me just find, it's a long sentence you start with here, Elaine, so I think that's roughly it.
That's it, yeah.
Okay, like you guys, probably, I've been to many public meetings run by scientists who specialise in systems thinking. And the systems thinking brings in leverage points and tipping points as well, with that whole area of thinking. And these meetings are filled with community activists trying to develop new sustainable circular systems that society can hang itself on and frame itself around. I think she's talking about the donut economy there.
Yeah, or variations around the theme.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was what stuck in my head when struck to me.
Elaine is right. These meetings are sometimes run by scientists. Very often they're run by community activists who maybe are scientists as well.
Yeah.
I think maybe a way forward is to, you know, the word run. The organisers maybe need to be representative of a more diverse range of pool of people.
Yes.
But I've been to some of these things and I'm not really sure they are run, though. They do try and be quite democratic, but then if you become too democratic and you allow everybody's voice to be heard, nothing. There's a lot of talking, nothing's done.
Do you think also, I think also these events seem to attract a certain kind of person as well, so you don't get a diversity in these groups. They are generally the, like,
is that the marketing though, or is that the subject matter?
It could be the marketing, because they're talking from their own perspective and talking in their own language, and not everybody's really going to fully understand that.
People need to see themselves, don't they, to feel like they want to.
Yeah, it's a bit like when you walk past a restaurant, can you see yourself sitting in that restaurant? And if the answer is no, and there are reasons why, then you're not going to go into that restaurant, are you? It's like anything. If you feel like you're able to go through, walk through the door confidently, then
I mean, the aim, next bit is the aim, being to try and mitigate the climate and ecological crisis that we all face. Yeah, I mean, if we all face it, why isn't there a more diverse range of people at these meetings? Does it need to be a fully diverse range, though? You know, you get people who are starters, people who are continuers, and people who finish.
I think we need to have diversity, purely because it's just the solutions that are come up with can be so hypothetical and so far flung in the future. It's not something you can really grasp and do something today, right this second. If you go to a meeting, you often want to take something away from it. You know, every episode of this podcast, we try our best to come up with an actual overt action. Sometimes there are, you know, actions that just come through our conversations that maybe spring into your head as you listen or as we're talking. But we also come up with overt actions, and I do wonder if the overt actions that they come up with are not actionable by everybody in that group.
And the motivations behind that as well.
Yeah. What is the motivation? Why? You know, it can also lead into inferiority complex, because you feel like, well, these people are the experts, these maybe the scientists. I feel inferior to them. I don't want, and that's not where you want to be. You want them to be on equal ground, on equal footing. I remember Brian Cox, the scientist, saying what really motivates him to go out and do TV programs, especially, you know, he's an intelligent guy. He can talk the talk, as it were. He can talk the scientific talk, but he wants to talk about it on the level that everybody will understand. Because he thinks it's important. So that's what you need to do. You need to have it so it's understandable to the audience you're talking to. And I think that's sometimes where these sorts of groups fall down.
I mean, the similarity, I'd say, between Brian Cox and David Attenborough...
Good comparison.
They're not one of us. They're very intelligent people. They're from... they're not working class. You listen to David Attenborough, he's very, very well spoken, but somehow he crosses, and Brian Cox does, he crosses that barrier of class that's in this country.
Yes. I think because
I don't know how they really do that.
Because they don't talk down. You know,
is that the key at leading these meetings? Then don't talk down to people.
Yeah, I think it becomes a version of preaching, doesn't it? That you're being preached to rather than being spoken to.
Scripted.
Yeah, scripted, or just being preached to, and just this. I think we, we do have an inferiority complex. I mean, you can't. Mm. There's no way you can tell me that you've never had an inferiority complex in this situation. You know,
me,
just in general,
anyone, yeah.
Or you yourself. Yeah, I'm talking to you. I'm talking to anybody who's listening. You know, you're going to have an inferiority complex, even if you don't necessarily acknowledge it.
Mm.
It's going to happen. So when I try and talk to, I mean, in a way, am I doing that as well? Am I talking down to people? The person who's listening.
I think that has to be a self monitoring process on a moment by moment basis. If you feel yourself dipping into that, then you need to potentially back away. Yeah. I do remember one guy I knew years ago. I think he's passed away now, but he used to, regardless of what the meeting was or how important it was, he would not go to meetings. He said, I'm not going to sit around a table and talk. I'm a doer. And I've often thought, how do you attract those people? But I don't necessarily think you need to attract them to the meetings. You need to engage them in what's happened at the meeting to direct their action.
Yes. I think that sort of person then needs to be engaged in a very different way that a formal meeting does not work for them.
But the David Attenboroughs and the Brian Coxes, when they're talking, I don't necessarily see them. They don't think they see themselves as leaders. Whereas somebody stood up in front of a meeting, very easy to dip into that. But what I do see at meetings very quickly, no matter what the meeting is, or what the subject is, it very quickly dips into pack mentality and it's pack behaviour. And I remember going to, said donut economy. I went to a donut economy meeting in Oxford last summer. And there must have been 100, 200 people there. And we were in this meadow and stood in a circle doing this exercise. We had to position ourselves where we thought the answer to various problems were that were thrown at us. And I just watched. And what I could see happening was pack behaviour. That nobody was positioning themselves to answer this conundrum in a certain place because nobody else was. And I thought, this isn't necessarily the right answer. People are just, they don't want to stand out too much.
Yes, and so you'll have the leaders that will go and make the decision first, and then you'll have the followers who will then follow.
Yeah.
Yeah, those followers don't necessarily want to go and stand in a different situation.
Yeah, this is interesting. Next part of the question that Elaine sent in, we don't have to try too hard these days to convince people we need to act to avert disaster. Because unless the natural world's health is generally good, humanity will struggle to survive. You're right. We don't have to convince people, but I think we still need to convince people that it's not somebody else that needs to act.
Yes.
But this stuff about we as individuals can make a difference, that's something that's thrown at us by the big polluters of the world to distract from what they're doing.
Yes. And I always say that when it comes to convincing people, once again, it comes back to this whole inferiority thing and being preached to. But also, your life is individually complex already.
Yeah.
To actually deal with this real and existential crisis is hard on a day-to-day basis, because you've got to get food on the table, you've got to keep a roof over your head, and keep your family safe. So those three things, for some individuals, that is all their energy goes into that because of circumstance.
But I think to make a better job of the circumstance we find ourselves in is not realigning what we do; it's realigning the values around what we do. So that will make very minor changes in motivation, and so you are still motivated by, you know, the bottom line, how much is in your pocket and surviving, but you're able to maybe see opportunities that you couldn't maybe.
Yeah, and I think opportunity of time and energy. You need to have the time and energy to do those things.
And value in people's time and energy as well.
Yeah, so the question goes on, the general issue and barrier to people making changes in their lives is there's a lack of leadership and direction from the people with the power to galvanise us.
I'm struggling with that one.
Well, it goes on to say the leaders, decision makers, and people with vested interest in maintaining the business as usual attitude rarely attend these meetings or absorb the feedback those meetings produce. Yeah, because they have vested interests.
Yeah.
And that's what stops the leaders. They're going to lead you in the direction where those vested interests take them rather than where the common
good is.
That's
on the assumption the leaders at these meetings are the leaders and decision makers of society.
Yes. So as I'm talking about the leaders of, when it comes to leadership and direction for the people of the power to galvanise us, they're going to be the people actually with the true power.
But if they're not at the meetings, can they galvanise us?
No, because they wouldn't necessarily want to be at the meetings because they have the vested interests.
It's knotty, isn't it?
It's very knotty, yeah. It's what it feels like to me anyway.
Yeah. The general issue is the barrier to people making changes in their lives is a lack of leadership and direction from people with the power to galvanise us. I'd also add into that a lack of direction in ourselves because we've lost sight of values as well. What you said just now, leaders and decision makers and people with vested interests in maintaining the business as usual attitude are rarely at these meetings or absorb feedback. So I think a good exercise would be to take the emotion out of it and stand back and just ask the question, why? And leave space to just churn on that. Why don't they? Maybe talk to somebody who is one of those people. Don't talk to them as an enemy. Just talk to them and try and work out what's going on in their head.
Yeah. I heard a story recently about it was a black American who actually befriended somebody in the Ku Klux Klan. And over 30 years, over the period of 30 years, the guy in the Ku Klux Klan had eventually left because he wasn't being attacked by the guy, attacked by somebody who obviously was... You know, the Ku Klux Klan are obviously racist.
Yeah.
And he wasn't attacking him as a racist. He wanted to understand, this black American wanted to understand why he was in the Ku Klux Klan.
And he
actually took time to listen to him and talk to him.
And gave the other person a perspective that he might not have had time or chance to do.
Very extreme example, but that's where we've got to be. And that comes into the next part, which is how do we break down the them and us culture that's evolving in the adaptation process we're all in? And how do we get everybody at these meetings instead of the separation and separate meetings we see now? It's not too late. We've not yet polluted as much as we think. And the unfairness in the world societies is not too advanced either. The us and them thing is probably one of the biggest barriers to human progress in so many ways. Because it's been there for years. It's been there forever. There's always been an us and them. There's always been the people who have the power and the people who don't have the power. Throughout history.
Yeah.
I've been listening to a lot of historical podcasts recently about the British monarchy, which dips into the European monarchy, of course, because it's all intertwined, and also into the history of how countries created, how countries came about. Mm. And it was always often just either the people who had the power or people who seized the power in whatever way. So there has always been an us and them.
Mm.
And I think that's quite intrinsic in humans, and I think that's maybe...
How do we break that down, though? I mean, I would say one thing to consider is there an us and them in the animal kingdom? We are part of the animal kingdom, but, we're the only species that have that. Just something to think about. How do we break down the us and them culture? I would say in two ways. One relationship at a time, and maybe instead of actually expecting somebody else to stop seeing them as separate to us, maybe we need to look at pick somebody in our life that frustrates us or we're bigoted against, and we say, I don't like them, and blah, blah. Maybe actually take a step. You're the person who takes a step towards them and gets to understand them, and then they might get to understand you. So those two things, one relationship at a time, and maybe you're the one who's the aggressor in this.
You're looking then at you're looking at the long term here, right?
Mm.
You're looking at the long term of actually, and is then when you start doing that, I would say that it could lead to actually other people were aping that behaviour?
Mm. Oh, absolutely, because we are a group species. I mean, how do we get everybody at these meetings? I don't think we need to. We just need to get more different types of people at these meetings.
And
because the rooms aren't big enough to get everybody in them.
And better outcomes.
Yeah.
More actionable outcomes.
Yeah.
Don't stop making it so, because it can be very intellectual.
Mm.
It can be very academic as well. Mm. The outcomes, and not everybody is academic, and everybody is intellectual.
You say, Elaine, we see separate meetings. I'm not sure I am seeing separate meetings. I'm just seeing people who go to meetings and people who don't. Maybe wrong there, but that's just my perspective.
Yeah. It becomes its own group, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that she says it's not too late. We've not yet polluted as much as we think. I'd like to know more why you think that. Where's the evidence that you seem quite firm on that. And the unfairness in the world societies is not too advanced either. Well, let's hope it isn't. And the last part is, that's just my view, Elaine says, and my view is there is still an opportunity for a fair and just survival.
I think there's always that opportunity.
Mm.
I think there's always opportunity in the world.
There's an opportunity for opportunity.
It's an opportunity for anything that had to happen. So try and make, I would say an action today is try and make an opportunity of a positive opportunity, you know, to actually engage with somebody who you don't agree with, like you said earlier, Stuart. And you don't have to agree with them, but listen to them as well. And, you know, and don't expect them to listen directly back to you. It's got to be done over time. You can't just expect trust to be earned overnight both ways. And trust is earned both ways as well.
Mm.
You can't expect it overnight, but you can sit and listen.
Yeah. And another opportunity has come up. Paco from Wimbledon, our second listener question today. He's taken the opportunity to get us another question in.
I like how you segued into that second question.
I don't know. I haven't read the question, so I don't know if it fits in nicely with the lanes, but have a read of this second question.
So Paco's question is as follows. Thanks for your question, Paco. And good to have you back on the podcast as well.
I wonder if he was born in Wimbledon with a name like Paco. Very anyone possible. For tennis? Go on.
See, I think Wimbledon lawn tennis isn't actually in Wimbledon.
No, I know.
Anyway, it's a bit like Wimbledon Football Club are not in Wimbledon, are they?
Not anymore.
They're in Merton, I think.
Plough Lane.
Exactly, yes. Wimbledon. So Paco from Wimbledon says, I've just called it Wimbledon from Paco almost. Mm. Paco from Wimbledon says the following. I've seen viruses and pathogens that have been extinct for 30,000 years but found frozen in the world's ice caps have been reactivated in the laboratory when pairing them with amoeba. If these frozen viruses emerge from the melting ice and find their way into the world's rivers and oceans, do they pose a new threat to humans as they could morph into something else if the conditions are perfect, like in the lab? I seem to remember Paco's had questions about sort of science and biology in the past. Mm. So obviously, Paco, it's something you're interested in, the fact you've been looking at this.
Mm.
There must be viruses and pathogens that are just...
I'm not sure they're extinct, they're just dormant.
Dormant was going to be the word I would say, yes.
I mean, Paco, you are right. They could reemerge, but you're assuming that's a bad thing. And we were talking about diversity, and maybe this is the link with Elaine's question in the first part of this episode. Maybe we need a more diverse range of pathogens. Maybe we live in too clean a world.
Do we need more challenges as a species, is what you're saying?
Because
we've died a million deaths from various viruses, haven't we?
Yeah. Now, you say about these frozen viruses could emerge from melting ice and find their way into the world's rivers and oceans. Whether that's true or not, you still got the same issue of people who methane that's locked up in the ice sheets. They don't. They say, "Oh, well, we've got thousands and thousands of years before that all leaks out and kills us." But it doesn't all need to leak out; just a certain amount. And then when it starts melting at a certain speed, it speeds up.
Mm.
So there are positive and negatives with this. I mean, this is very. I've not got any knowledge around this at all. I've not seen any programs on the telly or listened to any radio programs about this. But there are hidden threats everywhere. And maybe in a future question, Packer, you can maybe share with us some of the research that's being done in the laboratories, because this is an action in and of itself, just to look into this whole question.
Just look into it. I was thinking of the threat. You know, you said there's multiple threats.
Mm.
And those threats are often can be geographical. So here in the UK, we've had an inordinate amount of rain recently, haven't we?
Yeah.
And there's been lots of flash flooding and lots of pretty serious flooding. I was on the train to Maidenhead yesterday, and it was just astounding just how much the rivers were overflowing, and also just how wet the fields were. You know, it wasn't just by the river. There were fields that were just almost like little mini lakes.
Mm.
So what I'm saying is, geographically, you can be just in the wrong location, or in a location that's actually more dangerous and the threat is more real.
Mm.
So this could be the same. It could be similar, that you could be in a location where these pathogens are released, and there could be an issue that could cause an issue for us as a species.
Mm.
But we've followed as a species, we have overcome past issues, past pandemics, especially. I mean, think about the Black Death, which wasn't just a one-off occasion. It happened several times.
Mm.
It came back again and returned. It disappeared and returned. You know, and that killed a lot of us, especially in Europe. It killed a lot of people in Europe.
The similarity with this question and the last question is the opportunity. I mean, this might be an opportunity, these pathogens that are locked up. It's easy to assume it's going to be a negative.
I wonder what the motivation is behind actually reactivating them in the laboratory. Is it to understand them? Is it to understand how these things...
That's where we need an expert in, to find out why they're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, that would be my... That would be the reason why I think they would be doing it.
Plenty of actions here for us.
Yeah, yeah. We need an expert in... would it be pathology? Or virology?
Yeah, virology. Who knows?
If there's a virologist listening to this podcast right now, or if you know somebody who's a virologist... get them to send an email to us at thepeoplescountryside@gmail.com and we can maybe see if we can get them onto the podcast and maybe rediscuss this or come back to this.
Are you enjoying the longer form episodes we're producing in 2024, William?
The questions, we try to find a link between the questions. That's one thing. Sometimes there's a natural link between the questions, isn't there? It's definitely a refreshing way of doing the podcast for myself. How about you, Stuart?
Yeah, it's just different. Your head works around things differently.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm doing an introduction quite as often, or I'm not doing a half amount of time, because we used to do one episode, one question per episode, and we used to have to introduce each episode. But now we're doing two questions an episode. We only have to introduce once.
I think it also shortens the introduction down, because we know we've got two questions to discuss, and we don't know how long those discussions are going to take, because the questions can be quite deep and meaningful sometimes, and we really want to dig down into them.
Mm. So the next two questions we've got coming in, we're going to dig down into, is Ivy in Worthing, West Sussex. You're going to have to stretch that.
Just going to have to really analyse it deeply. Yeah.
And then we've got Mary from Gorzil in Swindon.
Gorzil, which has got a Z in it.